Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be with you this week, especially as we head into November, which is known for a number of things. Thanksgiving coming up. Also, our 200th episode of the show is coming up. Ridiculous. Martha's sitting here and I'm like, can we believe that we've done it this long, Martha?
Well, you've done it this long. I haven't.
Martha's a newbie to the show. She's coming up on a year here pretty soon. But yes, almost 4 years for me, I think, January of 08. Yeah, ridiculous. So 200 episodes, and we are actually going to be doing a contest surrounding that. We are going to ask for your videos that commemorate your listening experience of 200 episodes. So any way that you want to commemorate that, favorite shows, you know, words of congratulations for making it through 200 episodes, anything that's impacted you specifically, you're going to submit a video to us. And the winner is going to get some actual awesome prizes, including a $200 gift certificate to commemorate 200 episodes, as well as having your video featured on our site and having you featured on the show. You will be famous. So you're going to check that out at our blog. We're going to introduce that and give you some more details on that. So, but for this week's show, in addition to, like I said, Thanksgiving and us having our 200th episode and any other holidays that come up nationally and internationally here in the month of November, it is also National Adoption Month. So we are here to celebrate that. You know that we did that last year, and we want to highlight that again this year by talking about some of the new and great things that are happening in this sphere. Later on in the show, though, you're going to hear Joanne Condi from our Focus Counseling Department addressing a question from a listener who is now pregnant and is concerned. She works at a Christian radio station and is concerned just kind of all the ramifications of this and how she's going to deal with that and going from there. So she will be addressing that for our inbox question. And then our culture segment this week is with Kelly Rosati, our Vice President of Community Outreach here at Focus on the Family. You've heard her on the show as well. And she's going to tell her own story of adoption that she has chronicled in the book, Wait No More. So we're going to get to hear her story. She's talked, obviously, about Focus's efforts, but now we're going to hear her personal journey, that of her and her husband. So very exciting. But here we are doing a roundtable, and we're going to hit on a couple things this week. Of course, we have Katie. You knew her as Porter, now Overstreet. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, thanks for having me, Lisa.
I know, a lot happens in a year.
Yeah, it does, absolutely.
So, hey, we've just walked through your story with you, because, you know, you were here, you talked about adoption orphan care last year, then you were here talking about your story of considering adoption in a relationship before it's actually has moved to marriage. So apparently that didn't scare your now husband.
Yeah, it didn't, thankfully. Good. So, yeah, and then I was on, too, talking about, now we're planning a wedding. What does that look like? That what episodes? Yeah, I really have shared it all with the Boundless
Here
folks.
We are. And now I told her before we started taping, you know, when are you going to start adopting these 12 kids? We're waiting for them to just start happening. So
yeah, we're going on 4 months, so we're waiting a little bit longer before we jump into kids.
Well, we'll just, you know, we're just going to keep her accountable, folks, here at the Boundless Show, because, you know, we just need to make sure that she's, you know, we're holding their feet to the fire. No, I'm just teasing. But very fun to have Katie here. A newcomer to the table, Kevin Carlson, is here with us. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Very fun to have Kevin here. He's going to be sharing some of his story, he and his wife, how they have been involved in the world of foster care and adoption in their own way, which is kind of exciting. And we will hear a little bit about that in a moment. Martha is here at the table as well. Martha, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa.
Martha has not yet adopted any children, but we're waiting for her to as well. So
we'll
see. After today, she's going to go out today after the show and adopt a few kids. We'll see how it works. So very exciting. We are going to talk. Okay, here's the subject for today's roundtable. You know, last year, those of you, I alluded to Katie being here on the show, we talked about what really adoption and orphan care means, especially for our audience when we think towards the possibility of being involved in this and really the church's mandate and a believer's mandate as laid out in Scripture. And we talked very specifically about what it means to have adoption as your plan A. And Katie just really shared last time her own conviction of really coming into this and realizing, wow, this is what Scripture says. And as I'm looking towards marriage and having a family, what does it really look like? look like to consider taking kids on as really a plan A for having kids. And that was really a fun discussion and a convicting one. But here I want to open up the conversation because we've thought, and many of our audience have thought probably throughout the year and have gotten involved in different ways. What are some fun ways that we have gotten involved in helping out when we think of the sanctity of human life under the banner, you know, all of this comes under that banner, to love others, to care for others. We know the mandate for orphans and widows. What does that look like for us practically? And so I want us to start talking about how we've done that, what that looks like, what we've considered doing, and just some of the implications of that. So let me just throw that out on the table here as far as having that kind of conversation, because I think it's important. And maybe Katie, you could kind of start with where you are. Obviously, professionally here at Focus, this is part of your life, but just some things that you have seen and some things that you've done and just kind of where that is in your own heart.
Sure. Yeah, like you said, it is really part of my work, and I am blessed to be able to do something that relates to something that I'm passionate about and that I'm excited about and that I believe fully in, and that is caring for orphans. And so it's a neat place for me to be, and as it relates to work, but also personally, I found ways to be involved even before I was married, and then my husband and I are considering what that means for our family and how we build a family. But it's neat to see how, with this area in particular, there's not one way I can tell folks to be involved, and there's not one way that really is the best thing to do. And it really is neat how God uses so many different skills and abilities and giftings and interests to benefit kids and to benefit orphans and the families who are then welcoming them home permanently, because it's not a cookie cutter type of ministry. And so it's really neat just to see how the Lord has been using that. And so I have this heart for kids. And when I was like 12, I started babysitting before I was even allowed to stay home by myself, you know, made my mom nervous, but I've always loved kids. I love being around them. So I've spent time working and doing respite care. It's called, it's kind of like babysitting, but it's a little higher level for an adoptive family. These kids have some severe special needs. And so there are some special needs of that family too, and some special ways that I have to relate to them, and some things that I've had to learn as I go about that. But it's been neat to see how the Lord can teach you and mold you and teach you how to better relate to people and how to understand people and how to be humble as you come to someone and say, I want to help, and I'm willing to learn what's helpful to you, rather than here's what I think you need and here's how I'm going to do it, even if it's not really beneficial to you. So God, I've seen God work in so many different ways, in so many different lives, to speak up for those who can't speak up for themselves and to impact orphans in ways that look so different from one to the other, but just are really capturing His heart for what it means to minister to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, maybe this is just me, but doesn't it seem like more people are adopting now? I mean, I see, you know, you would say 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, it was kind of that a family who couldn't have children and they were looking for a baby and whatever. Now I go to church and I see families that have like 4 or 5 adopted kids, and you're just kind of like, whoa, here it is. And I mean, I think that what we've done here at Focus, stuff like Wait No More and stuff, has really elevated that. And I think families really are stepping up. And so it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, there really has been an increase over the last several years. And I think there is an increase, but also an increase in the publicity of it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, years ago, it was those couples who struggled to have biological children, but wanted to build a family. So they adopted, but they would specifically adopt a child of their race and tell no one that child had been adopted. Mm-hmm. And so there's been this more public side of it where it's saying, no, I didn't birth this child physically, but we call it not a child of my womb, but a child of my heart. And you were born in my heart, and that celebration of it, rather than keeping it more a secret. And so that's part of the reason I think that it seems more like it's happening a lot more. But also we've seen churches really waking up to saying, Scripture has called us to this, and oops, we've not been doing anything. And as God has adopted us as His sons and daughters, we are called to adopt children into our family. And it's a neat picture of the gospel in a very tangible way to a watching world.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. All right, Kevin, I want to hear a little bit of your story. You two are a relatively young married, meaning you're both young and you haven't been married for a long time. Yeah, yeah. And you're married, you and your wife, and you've gotten involved in a really unique ministry. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's called Fostering Hope, and it's an interfaith ministry here in the Springs, and they basically go into a church and they assemble a team of, I would say, 6 or 8 people, And then they pair that team up with a family that has foster kids. And then you just meet with the family and figure out what all their needs are, which I had no idea how demanding it is to be a foster parent. And so you just help them out with whatever. So it's kind of really individualized. And so you might be driving their kids to their, you know, literally it could be 20 appointments a week, or helping them with their homework or mowing their lawn or whatever. And it's just, it's really helpful to the families. And the coolest thing for us is that, you know, it wasn't overwhelming. And we're able to help them, and we usually babysit so they can have a night out away from everything. And we'll do that like once a week usually. But Fostering Hope just says, you know, if you could do one thing a month, then that will be really helpful. And since you have a team, it makes a huge difference in the family. Mm-hmm. So,
and this is you and your wife, Jessie. And mm-hmm. how is it that you actually really realized that this was something that you were burdened for and that you really wanted to be involved in?
I think we became aware of all the cool things that were going on with adoption and orphan care. And, you know, we understood the biblical mandate to at least be involved in some way. And I don't think everyone's necessarily called to adopt. We feel like that may be in our future, but we're not real sure yet. But we wanted to be involved somehow. And so we heard about this way to do it. And it's more than just, you know, giving money to organizations or whatever. We learned a lot about everything through the Wait No More conferences. And we, you know, had no idea. We just thought we'd check it out. And it was really cool. And we actually found out about Fostering Hope through the adoption ministry at our church. So we're kind of, I think it's really sad that, you know, we didn't find out about it sooner, and not many people know about opportunities like this. So, but it's been a huge blessing for us.
Yeah. And we were talking, Katie, on the front end, how, you know, obviously Fostering Hope is something here local in Colorado Springs, and there are a number of different groups like that. But really, you don't have to have necessarily an organized organization
right.
to go out under. You can just find families and say, what can I help with?
Right. Yeah. And that's a neat thing. I mean, it's great having a ministry like Fostering Hope who can help just bring everybody together, get them on the same page. And it is helpful that they have some levels of training too, to say, let's understand the needs of families rather than just running in gangbusters trying to get something done and not realizing how it might be harmful to the family because you're not respecting their boundaries and their needs. But yeah, it's as simple as just identifying a foster or adoptive family in your church or community. And most churches have some family, certainly within most communities. So worst case, you go find an adoption agency and say, I want to make myself available as a resource to families. Here are some of the things I like to do. But usually you can identify an adoptive family. And sometimes it's easy to identify because they've got African children in a white home. So, mm-hmm. you know, okay, there's probably something going on here that, mm-hmm. and maybe I could be a blessing to this family. But it does require coming at that too from that spirit of humility to say, here's what I'd like to do. And I feel called to help you in whatever way that means, and being persistent with that. Cause you know, it's easy for a lot of us to say, oh, we're doing fine. We don't need help. We're good. But even though we might really want somebody to be walking alongside with us, but it's hard to ask for help. But being persistent in a way that, again, is not just going to trample over the families, but also being respectful of their needs and saying, okay, I want to learn your family and I want to come over and spend time with you guys. And if I really want to babysit, how about I come over, you know, one Saturday afternoon and all together, we'll all have lunch. Maybe I just bring a pizza over and get to know you as well as your kids. Understand the boundaries that you have set up, understand the rules that you have in place, and understand the reasoning behind some of it. We often see that parents who are parenting kids with previous trauma, which are a lot of adoption situations, there's different parenting strategies that have to be utilized. These kids have just been through a lot in their short lives. And so too often we say, well, I know how to do this. I know how to handle this. I've parented kids before. Well, you know what? This might be a different situation. So how can we come at that family in a way that's respectful of them and of their boundaries? And again, it does just take you identifying a family and then just saying, we'd love to be able to support you. And if it means we go to Target every other week, can you just give me a list, even of like, just write down the 10 things that you need and I'll just pick them up for you and bring them over. Even that simple thing that the mom can just cross off her list, not have to worry about taking care of that, whether it's meals, like Kevin said, meals and laundry and babysitting and yard work. Those simple things that seem like, well, why do we need to do that for somebody? When you've got parents who are welcoming home children, again, some of them with some very difficult backgrounds and coming from really hard places, it frees up those parents to say, let us have a time to just work with our kids and to spend time with our kids and investing in the relationship, which is the most important thing too. Now, obviously, we need toilet paper, we need to have the lawn mowed, but how can someone else help us with those simple tasks?
Yeah, well, and the thing I love about that is, as Kevin alluded to, is that this is something where everyone with every gifting can be part of, you know, so some guy that's sitting here listening to this saying, oh, you know what, I don't do kids, okay, I don't do that. Well, you know what, you can mow someone's lawn.
Right.
You can,
you can build the bunk beds for the family who just welcomed home two kids or something like that. There's all kinds of projects that these families could use help with that, yeah, maybe doesn't require you to babysit. That's fine. Mm-hmm. We understand. Not everybody likes the all the time with the kids. Mm-hmm. But what is the gift that the Lord has given you that you may be able to use to bless a family?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Martha loves to babysit.
I do.
So Martha, I mean, obviously Martha and I, you know, here we are single, but we have been involved with Focus on the Family for a long time. And obviously now know this ministry so well, know Wait No More, know what we're doing with adoption orphan care. How, Martha, have you had anything like, as you've known of this ministry, where it's kind of like pricked your heart and been like, oh, how could I be involved in this in any way?
Well, I have to be honest and say it hasn't. And part of that, I'm glad that Katie clarified, if you know, what are your strengths and find your place to fit in, because my first impression of it is like, these are some needy people. And that is exhausting and tiring and eats into my time. And so this gives me a new perspective to think about of how could I plug in and yet also face my selfishness at the same time and make changes.
Yeah, it is a neat, it's convicting as you go meet with these people, like the family that I serve, just the needs that this family has is unbelievable. The parents have totally, radically changed their lives to meet the needs of their three children. I mean, just like you look at them and you go, that's kind of crazy, the things you've had to do, but it's been so beneficial to the kids. So when I can walk into that environment and go, wow, I'm here for like a couple hours, you know, I'm doing the little thing. This is, I mean, it feels like an imposition to my time. But when I see the sacrifices that these families have made and feel like, and they have said to me, it is so helpful that we know we can call you, even if it's just every couple months when they really get in a pinch with something and they can trust that I understand their needs. It's been a huge blessing to the family.
And I love, I mean, this is a great time to reiterate what really blew me away last year when we first started talking about this. And that is that these are, in many cases, couples who have looked at this, have completely shifted their perspective and said, okay, maybe we're now empty nesters. Maybe we have kids that are older in our home or biological. What can we do to bless these kids? How are we going to take on these kids and find out, make it about them? I mean, this is about serving them. This isn't about what we need in our family, you know, because some of these people are like, we don't need any more kids, okay?
Right.
We don't, you know, but we have the resources. We now maybe have the time. We obviously have the heart for this, the desire to do this. How can we bless these kids?
Yeah, and there are a lot of empty nesters who are either A, opening their homes and welcoming, you know, and adopting, and they're great families because they've parented before. And so for a 14-year-old kid, they could be a great parent. You've got the older kids who can help teach them how to be a brother or a sister, how to live in a family. But also you've got some of these empty nesters who are saying, okay, I really don't feel called to adopt, but now I'm the kind of quote unquote adoptive grandparent for these children. And I come over on a regular basis and we just hang out and I bring them a little birthday gift and I'm there at their birthday parties and we just celebrate life together. And I'm like a grandparent to all these kids. And it's just a neat ministry that they can have, you know, time with the kids and see them grow up and invest in their lives without welcoming them home permanently. But again, a great blessing to the adoptive families who say, we're so thankful there's other people who are investing in our family.
That's cool. I think too, you know, one thing that I'm really passionate about is I just love old people. And so kind of going to the other end of the spectrum, and a friend of mine and I have talked about what it would look like within our church or within the community that we know to start really spending time with elderly. And, you know, some of the folks who don't have anyone else who maybe they're, you know, they're, I think of this even with my mom, because my mom's 82. And, you know, one thing she always tells me is, wow, you know, my friends are just dying off. And it is true, you know, and my dad's gone and her friends are dying. And to really find that community and find people who want to spend time with you and can do that on your schedule, you know, is sometimes a challenge. And so we're kind of considering, my friend and I, of what it would look like to start just visiting folks or starting to say, you know, hey, How many times do we go to Target or Walmart in a week? A lot, because I can't seem to consolidate my life and get it all done efficiently. So I just make all these trips or to the grocery store. And how difficult is it to just call someone up and say, hey, do you want to come along with me? Or do you have anything that you need me to pick up for you? Or do you want to hang out maybe and play cards sometime? Or just, you know, go to this play or something like that, and just incorporate someone who's older, because I think especially us as singles, we have so much in common, you know, with these folks, like widows and stuff. They're single too, you know, and so.
Well, it's easy to think the problem is overseas, you know, of
right.
The orphans are in Africa and I'll send my money over there once a month. But just to have your eyes open for the needs in your community or your neighborhood or that lady in your church, it's a different perspective.
Yeah.
And just realizing that people, I mean, I think we overlook the fact that so many people are lonely, whether they are elderly or whether they are a family that's adopted kids and feels like they're going through a difficult patch and no one understands them and no one is there to step in and help. And, you know, to realize that there are many needs that can be met in that sphere. Another thing I'm thinking of is, you know, we've for a long time talked about people volunteering like at pregnancy medical clinics and, you know, young moms there. I mean, there are so many different opportunities, whether you're helping out at the clinic itself or whether you embrace and befriend moms that are, you know, kind of coming out of that experience and are now going to choose to keep their baby or maybe give the baby up for adoption. I mean, there are so many different people that need to be befriended in their situation. Any other creative ideas or things that you guys have thought about or have seen done that would kind of spark ideas in people's heads?
I did volunteer at a pregnancy center for a couple of years, just helping with their reception desk. But the opportunities were really surprising. It's not just the counselor one-on-one, but they had people organizing diapers and formula and baby clothes and working on files and data entry. And so there were a whole variety for all kinds of giftings. So.
And I know people that have kept like moms in their homes, like people that have an extra bedroom or an extra, you know, spot in their home or whatever, where just kind of helping them transition. I mean, that's another great way to be able to help out.
Yeah, there's a neat ministry. It's called Both Hands. It's a project of Life Song for Orphans, but it goes to what you were just talking about, Lisa. And what it is, it takes a verse of James 1:27 that pure religion is to care for orphans and widows. And, you know, often it's easy to emphasize one or the other. And obviously in the adoption area, we emphasize the orphan part quite a bit, which I think is right. But also we can't forget that there are widows as well. Well, what this project does is for adoptive families who are needing helping finance their adoption, they can apply for a project. And what happens is they find a widow in their community and they do some kinds of service project to help meet some basic needs that she has. And they can raise money to do that. And then anything that's in surplus can go towards their adoption. So you see families who are willing to give, and and the adoptive family can really minister to that widow right in their community. But at the same time, folks who are surrounding this family from this community or others can give to that project and also be giving to the adoption. So it's a neat way to see families reaching out in both capacities.
And I think it's just so great because when you are able to serve in a capacity like this, you know, we always talk about this boundless in a selfish way of how can I expand my sphere of just people that I know or just get out of my same rut or whatever. And, you know, sometimes we just feel so lame. We just go to do the same things, go to the same singles group, whatever. I mean, what a great way to serve and to meet people and to learn about new needs as well as just make new friends, you know, and get, I mean, I think it's just all around a win in that sense. So, okay, so Katie, hit us up with what are some great ways for people to find out more info about any number of things that they can do?
Well, our website is a great one. It's icareaboutorphans.org, and it specifically focuses on needs of kids in U.S. foster care. Like Martha said, we've been trying to raise awareness that there are kids right here in our communities and kids right down the street in your school district who need a family, but who also maybe just need some help and support. So we've got a resource on there called Wrapping Around Adoptive Families, which gets into some of the specifics we've talked about today. How can we support those families who may be called to adopt even if I'm not yet, or even the families that are called to be foster families for these kids? How can we support those families? So that resource is there. It's even a free download, so you can just get that for free. For adoptive families, we've got other resources there that would be helpful. If you know an adoptive family and just want to learn more about what they're experiencing, what they're going through, there's some helpful articles and things on there that may be a benefit as well.
Cool. Very awesome. All right. And everyone out there, we always tell you this because you're so amazing at it, but start posting this stuff on Facebook and start tweeting about it. Start throwing out this URL. Get involved and do something and start telling people about it and maybe get some of your friends to join you. It's always more fun and seemingly easier and less scary to do when you get a couple friends to join you in this and maybe trade off or get to know a family together or something like that. That could be really cool. So we want to see you guys blaze us away on our Facebook page about this, about some of the ideas that you are doing, not only this month in National Adoption Month, but throughout the year. So make sure you do that. Thanks, everyone, for weighing in and sharing your own stories in this.
Thanks, Lisa.
Well, here we are for this week's culture segment. And for those of you who have been listening to this week's show, you just heard us in a roundtable discussion talk about how young adults, single or not, can get involved in caring for orphans and widows and others who have largely been overlooked, I think, in our culture, not only in the U.S., but even internationally. And I was just talking to Katie Overstreet in the previous segment about how I feel like in the past few years, there's been more awareness for this. But I still think people, especially those who are single, young adults who maybe don't have kids, are kind of like, so what is this all about? Well, here we are going to find out what this is all about, because this is all just kind of like in our heads and very vague and very nebulous until we start talking to families who have done this and are in the midst of either forming forever families with kids who are now adopted, whether through the foster care system or otherwise, or have had adopted kids a long time ago and are really just a family and living life and doing this. And here we have John and Kelly Rosati. Welcome to both of you. You all know Kelly because she is our Vice President of Community Outreach here at Focus on the Family and has been on the show before. And she brought her hubster along to be part of this conversation because they are here to tell their story. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Well, you guys, our audience is not unfamiliar with the words Wait No More. It is Focus's initiative here. Really within the U.S. here, the foster care system, a number of legal orphans in our system who are waiting for homes. I think it's been quite an education for me in the past year and a half or longer even to realize that, as we said in the previous segment, we tend to think of orphans as being overseas. But there are so many kids, even here in the U.S., that are still waiting for families. And the difference between those kids that are in the foster care system because their parents are being rehabilitated or waiting to take their kids back or whatever, but there are some that are available for adoption because their parents are no longer considered fit to parent or their rights have been terminated. So you guys have a very unique story in light of this. Kelly, you just were sitting there in Wisconsin, as a single. Then you married John, and here you—I think you described yourself as a Midwestern girl who probably
boring as can be. Yep, just completely boring, Lisa. Totally boring.
Completely bored. Okay, well, I think this is a great story because the you guys have—I referenced Wait No More. You have a book now called Wait No More: One Family's Amazing Adoption Journey that is just newly. Fresh off the press, telling your own personal story. And obviously, Focus on the Family has now been involved in this for 4 years now, right? About four
three years.
Three years, mm-hmm. Okay. 3 years. And but really a lot of this is kind of made real by stories such as yours. And I want you guys to tell your story a little bit, because I think it's just great. And I think it's so the way that this book is written is so refreshing, because it's really just like, here's what it is, folks. This is how it happens. And I love the part of it that I want to start with is just how you guys were so... It started with taking on a girl named Angie when you were living in Hawaii. You had gone there.
Suffering for the Lord.
Suffering
Hawaii.
For the Lord, yeah. On the beaches of uh-huh. Hawaii, where you were dragged because of John's work in the Air Force. And you were a lawyer at this point, Kelly, and you had been married for a while. You kind of tell in the book how you tried to have biological kids, just nothing had happened. And really, it was the Lord saying to you, you know what, maybe this is an option, adoption. And you, I love how you said, you know, that wasn't any huge earth-shattering news for you. You were like, hey, you know, okay. So I love how the story turns and you're like, okay, so you have this opportunity to take Angie into your home to bring her closer to her sister. And you were both just very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about this experience, and especially you, Kelly. You're just like, I can do this. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be fun. She's so cute, and she's friendly, and this is fantastic. So tell us a little bit about how that kind of unfolded.
Oh, yeah. Well, we met and heard about Angie through this wonderful Christian couple that ran a ministry in Hawaii, and they had taken in all these girls from the foster care system and terrible past with abuse and neglect and abandonment, and we were at their dinner table, and they were holding hands and thanking God for their dinner, and it was such a beautiful, powerful picture of redemption. Well, then we learned that one of those girls had this sister, as you said, her name is Angie, and she was in a different foster home, and these girls weren't allowed to really see each other, and we were just outraged about that and indignant and thought, that's terrible, and what are we going to do? We could make sure that they see each other. We could drive them at least, and when the Lord began to work on our hearts about, okay, we've got a home, and maybe we should take her in, and mm-hmm. and you know, we'd been Christians for a long time and listened to Focus on the Family and knew all about daring to discipline and all the rest of that, and thought this was going to be a real simple endeavor. And so it was kind of with that very naive attitude that we set out, really truly wanting to help. And
our dear friends that were the foster parents, yeah. had warned us too of.
That's
of,
right.
of the trouble that we could be facing, and we were just...
But you guys did not listen.
Yeah, we just were...
Yeah, you can't hear. It's like those Charlie Brown scenes. You're just hearing wah, 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 and these nice friends yeah. of ours like tried to tell us, but when you're that excited, you just can't hear. So we brought her home. I would say we just had a very, very short honeymoon period, like yeah. maybe a
I think
day.
You said, yeah. No, you said 3 days.
Oh, 3 days. Yeah. Okay.
3 days of bliss. 3 days of bliss.
And then things just started going crazy. Like, she started being completely defiant and crazy lying behavior and cussing at us and hating us. And all of a sudden, it just felt like we had fallen into some dark hole. And we were like, what have we done? We used to have a really happy life. We'd been married
8 years.
8 years at that point. Yeah. Man, we were psyched. We loved each other, had a great marriage. Yep. You know, worried about where we were going to get our coffee.
We weren't pining for children, I mean, necessarily.
Yeah, where we'd get our coffee, what movie we'd see for the weekend. And all of a sudden, truly, we found ourselves in a kind of an emotional hell and wondering, what in the world do we do with this? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how the journey began.
Yeah. Yep. And really, like you described it, basically an emotional hell. And just recognizing that all of a sudden there were other people that had to be brought into this. I mean, you had her in a private school. You were getting help. Other people were saying, okay, we want to help you with this and this. But really, you guys were the parents at this point. So you had to figure out how, and in the midst of this, you know, your own marriage, having, you know, that relationship, it wasn't all about just going out and getting coffee anymore and figuring out movies and stuff. You were now right. responsible for the life of a child at that point. Okay, so I want to fast forward out of that, because obviously we're gonna let people know about this book, and they're gonna have to just read the story to get the full picture. But what better motivation to eventually adopt kids of your own than to have a child that, for whom you're wondering if this is ultimately even going to be possible or whatever? But really, fast forwarding, you guys now, you basically adopted 4 kids during your time in Hawaii, and different stories, each of them coming to the mix. I mean, you had to take each child and their own story and their own background and their own experience, and all of them. This wasn't just like a package deal, or you sat down and you got to choose, okay, this right. about this child's amazing. And so, it's not like a shopping trip. But talk about that a little bit, because you really, how you came into embracing that as this is going to be our story. Individually, four times over.
Yeah, scripture says that children are a blessing from the Lord, and we really believe that, it doesn't matter how that child comes to you. So they each did come in their own special way and in God's own unique timing.
And in pretty dramatic fashion in our case. So.
Yeah, and we really felt, I think for each one of those kiddos, it was, we were just being really led and I think directed. And knowing that, his direction was so clear to each of us, independently, I think really carried us through some what would prove to be challenging times and real tests.
Lisa, one thing I love to have John talk about for the guys who are listening, a lot of times people hear about these topics and they think it's just the women who are interested in this. And sadly, a lot of times at our Wait No More conferences, you do see kind of men being dragged in by their wives. Mm-hmm. But there's a real movement happening among Christian men, I think, to step up and to really be that father to the fatherless. And I think John speaks to that so well.
Yeah.
So
tell us a little bit about that.
I think there's a lot being said these days about living a life of adventure and what does that mean for us and for us as men, and I think adventure certainly is very much synonymous with risk, and that would also be synonymous with faith. And, without faith, it's impossible to please God. So I think this is a tremendous ministry. I think so many men have a deep longing to really do something with their life that they can really feel really good about, But they don't know, how to do that with all the other demands of life. And this is an opportunity to just use your family. And that family, whether it's just, you and your wife, or if you have your spouse and some kids, but just opening up that family circle and welcoming in another child or children, and just wrapping around them and just loving them in a very, very deep way, in a very powerful way. And that can be just so fulfilling. If you're a guy looking for something really, to sink your teeth into, I don't think you need to look much farther than this. As far as, ministries that you could be involved with, when we think of ministry, we think of, boy, I'm in full-time ministry, and I used to be in full-time ministry. I had no idea what full-time ministry was until I got involved with this, because there is no escaping this. There's no going home at the end of the day mm-hmm. and separating from it. There's no taking a vacation from it. You're strapping in forever. This is it. This is, there's no...
strapping in forever. There's no, I like that.
Yeah, there's no... Mm-hmm. There's no time off in a real sense.
Yeah, and I really like, too, how, and Kelly, you talked about this in your voice in the book, how you really were able to see in John how God had prepared him ahead of time for this, not only mm-hmm. through military service and who he was and what it meant to be called to a sense of duty and called to be, to service and to protection and all that kind of stuff. But I think that's a real call to men as well, is that wherever you are right now, God could easily be preparing you for something like this. And so it's not about just waste this season of your life and just coast and whatever, and then God's going to call you to something. I mean, there's preparation that could be happening now for ultimately what God is going to call you to in marriage or beyond or whatever. I think that's a good reminder.
Yeah, and I think the segment that you had earlier with your guests about come alongside a family, do this with family. We as a family need people to journey this with us. Mm-hmm. We need community, authentic community, people that are willing to be inconvenienced, people that are willing to make their walking this journey with us a big priority of their life, and not just some, kind of side thing like the recycling or whatever, mm-hmm. And so it's a really meaningful way, I think. You build connection, you build relationship, and like you said, you never know how God may be using this time to prepare you for what he has in the future.
Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about each of your four kids coming into the home, because they each had unique stories, and they each had, I love how in the book you have their photos of their adoption days and how, you know, there's a celebration of each of them coming into the family individually. But how does that then compare with, you know, what their stories individually and how they're brought in, but then also how God is growing your story as a family? Because ultimately, you know, you are forming a family and you are creating a family experience. This isn't just about, okay, well, here we go. We're going to provide you a home to live in and whatever. I mean, you are creating a family experience. So let's talk about how each of those kids was brought into the home and just the uniqueness of that.
Yeah, I would just say make no mistake about it. We are a family. Mm-hmm. And just like John said earlier, God brings kids to us, whether it's by birth or by adoption. And these kids couldn't be any more ours had they been our birth kids. These are our kids, and we are working. What's most important to us is that they know their identity in Jesus Christ, and they know their identity as a part of our family. And then beyond that, they have a lot of interesting and exciting aspects to them. You know, you've probably heard me say this before, Elise, but in our family, we're Korean, Hawaiian, Filipino, Chinese, Vietnamese, Micronesian, Italian, and Irish. And so we have a terrific multi-ethnic family, so there's that component. And then just lots of other interesting aspects. But I would say for each of the kids, what really strikes home to us about it, kind of the bigger picture to their little individual story and our individual story, is God's plan for each human life and the dignity and value of every human life. You know, if you ask people, what would you say to that teenage girl addicted to crystal meth, who's pregnant and the father is a street homeless kid, you know, what's the best scenario in that instance? Shouldn't she have an abortion? You know, if you even ask people in church with their inside voice, you just don't know what you're going to hear. You know, what about that schizophrenic homeless woman who has no access to prenatal care, is completely out of her mind? Surely if she gets pregnant, the best thing is abortion, is what some would have us believe. You know, what about that recent immigrant, for example, who doesn't even speak the language and may have an abusive husband and no resources? What should she do? Of course, abortion would be the best option, some would say, you know, or a situation of a young teenager who has experienced exploitation and abuse at the hands of a 40-year-old who gets pregnant. Everyone thinks these are such hard, if you will, or easy cases that abortion is the answer. Well, we don't believe that because these are the stories of our kids. And as we look at their faces, we cannot imagine life without them. Mm-hmm. And their lives have value, and God has a plan for each of their lives. It doesn't mean that the harm that they suffered before they came with us, it doesn't mean that the trauma they experienced isn't going to make for some challenging times, but that's okay. You know, sometimes people say, well, where's the happy ending? You know, if you're still experiencing challenges, the happy ending is now. Mm-hmm. The happy ending is that our kids are home. And even though they're experiencing some challenges associated with some things in their past, man, they're home, mm-hmm. and they're experiencing it with their mom and dad, and that's the happy ending.
Yeah. And I think there is that assumption, you know, erroneous assumption that, and maybe this was even your experience with Angie, that you just bring these kids into your home, and as long as they have like a little bit of time and just enough love, that yeah. this is going to be, eventually everything is going to smooth out and it's going to be easy. But you don't even know what may crop up, you know, I mean, years even yeah. down the road and stuff like that. But I like how you say, you know, we deal with that now in the context of family and what that looks like.
Absolutely. And just like all families, you know?
Right. So what would you say, you know, the two of you, what were you prepared for in parenting and in taking on adoption to four unique kids, and what weren't you prepared for?
I think one thing that we were prepared for was that we had a very good marriage, and I really thank mm-hmm. God for that. And I think we went into growing our family by having that really, really solidified. We had spent those years of just being husband and wife, preparing ourselves for parenting. You know, we listened to broadcasts, and we, you know, just did those kinds of things, and we tried to educate ourselves just sort of as we went. But I think we were, on the other hand, probably, you know, not very well prepared for just some of the you know, the trauma that those kids had experienced, and really kind of not really believing it, mm-hmm. Not really believing that all of the diagnoses that are out there today are legit. I now believe they are, mm-hmm. or at least you know, many of them. Mm-hmm. Just not fully getting, I think,
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, I'd say we had no clue how hard it would be. I mean, even if we might have known in our minds, I don't think that really translated down into our hearts. I mean, we did know intellectually, I think, right, when you say? Mm-hmm. We knew things were possible, but I certainly was never prepared emotionally for the difficulty. In fact, I would have friends who were parenting kids with a really severe trauma history and the things they were experiencing. And I would think, oh man, I could never deal with that. Well, we've, you know, now experienced things, including bipolar disorder, of course, and fetal alcohol, drug addiction in infants, Tourette's syndrome, a whole assortment of things. And here's what I want people to hear when they think about that. If you're like us, if you hear that kind of stuff, I mean, I would almost shut down and be like, oh my gosh, I could never do that. And I guess what we're, I think, here to, you know, help people and help show the world is that we are so not unique, and we are so,
that's for sure,
boring and so regular and nothing special. And it's just like any of the trials that we have in our lives. As they come up, the Lord, He is who He says. He is faithful and true. And we have experienced so much more deeply how He is near to the brokenhearted and how He does not let your foot slip just when you think you can't take another step. And so it hasn't been pleasant, all of the journey, but it's been such a joy to see the faithfulness of God through mm-hmm. the trials, mm-hmm. for real.
Yeah.
For real.
And I think a lot of times it's easy for us to overlook what God is doing in the lives of the kids. You know, we just mm-hmm. maybe we'll see or we experience, you know, whether parents or people looking from the outside in and saying, oh yeah, okay, so that's hard, or you guys are so great, you're just doing it, you're whatever. What have you seen and heard your own kids now articulate from their own experience, even through all the difficulties? I mean, even where is it when you hear something or see something and you say, God is working in this child's life and in our family?
Well, one of the neatest things we've seen is the reality that of the scripture and the power of the scripture in the lives of our kids. One of our kids has for a very long time and continues to experience extreme anxiety related to neurological issues. I mean, just pure brain chemistry type issues from the abuse that he experienced in utero with drugs and alcohol and what that did to him. And so it's really a hard thing to watch your child be really scared and not be able to understand why things are happening and just live with that anxiety. But at the same time, it's incredible to watch that same child kind of step into his place as a Christian, as a son of God, and say, my God is with me. I will fear not, that He did not give me a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. And I have literally experienced times where, you know, I can see him agitated, red in the face, sweating, just that anxiety gripping him. And as he asks God for help, and as he stands on the word of God, physically seeing him calm down, it's just, it's a blessing to see him grow. And I think for all of them to see them grow in the Lord and recognize that he is so real and he loves them so much and he wants to help them with their struggles. There's really no greater thrill, I think, than to see your kids grow in the Lord.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think too, just on this, you know, matter of adoption and growing your family through adoption, seeing the older kids, how they have embraced, when we only had two kids and it then grew to three and four, the older two, how they were just all in and how they were fully supportive and helped out as they could. And they were young at this point, you know, just, you know, six, five, four, in that range. Mm-hmm. But they got it and they understood it. and they could express it in a clear way, what we were trying to do as a family. And
that's
beautiful.
That's a great point. The kids see this so clearly from God's perspective, and it's kind of like this. The kids say, what? There are kids who don't have families? Like, they're mortified. We have a family. They can come with us. Like, they get it through God's eyes that it isn't about them. It's about how God wants to lead us and be a blessing through the blessings he's given us. And so that's been of great encouragement to us. There have been times where we have really struggled, and we talk about this in the book, with certain things, and just how God spoke to us through our kids and through their attitudes about all of this has been of great encouragement.
That's great. Well, obviously, we could just continue talking about this, but we're going to make people get the book and read it and get your story. And obviously, they can follow you, Kelly, through your work here at Focus on the Family and all that you are doing with your team, with Wait No More. And I just want to thank you, too, for sharing your story, not only through the book, but here on the show. And of course, I get to get little snatches of it on Facebook, too. We're Facebook friends.
That's right.
And hear, and really hear, even on Facebook, of how you do have others, you know, in your community and friends and stuff who hang out with your family and are able to be part of that. And, you know, it is really fun. You know, no one needs to be an island, and no one needs
Absolutely.
To just think, you know, I took on this quote unquote ministry, so we're just going to soldier it alone. No, you're like a family. No family
exactly.
is supposed to soldier it alone, regardless, you know.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I just love how you guys are just normal, and, you know, this is relatively normal. Kind of like
are.
I'm normal. Yeah. No, that's cool. So
you're normal, we're normal.
Exactly.
We're all normal.
Exactly. So thank you so much, John and Kelly, for sharing the story.
Thank you for having us.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Joanne Condy here at the table from our Focus Counseling Department. Welcome, Joanne.
Hello. Good to be here again.
Great to have you. Well, we are going to address a question from, it looks like, a young woman here who says, my fiance and I have fallen into the sin of fornication, and as a result, I got pregnant. I work for a Christian radio station in our town, and I have a feeling I will get fired for this sinful act. I've prayed for forgiveness, and I know God has forgiven me, but as for my family, pastor, and my manager forgiving me, I'm not so sure. I'm so shaken. I fear even for my little baby. What should I do?
Well, my heart goes out to you. This surely is a tough place to be. And the fact that you have already gone to the Lord is obviously the very first step. We serve a God, we love a God who's in the business of redeeming us, of transforming us, of healing us and helping us move forward. So hang on to that. And also, as you think about the next step, I would begin by going to the person that you trust the most. Maybe not go to those people first who will be more condemning, but just have a heart-to-heart with the person, that friend, somebody who's going to give you that unconditional love, and work through that initial speaking it out stage. After you've done that, then you can even role play with that person as to how mom or dad or pastor or manager, and have them play that part as you speak the words. And that will give you more confidence as to what you do next.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how she says, you know, and like you said, it's great that she already feels she's gone to the Lord and feels she's been forgiven, which is so true. But to recognize, and I think she is kind of recognizing that, that sin does have consequences and this may play out practically, you know, like with her job and she may have to work on the relationship with her folks and just dealing with that. Yeah. Is there anything that she can, you did mention the role playing, but anything that she can do just in preparing herself for that? Obviously, her fiance, I'm assuming that they're planning on moving towards marriage still in this, but what are some things that she maybe will expect as far as reactions from people?
Well, people can be up and down and all over the board, and sometimes the people that you least expect will be the most forgiving and empathetic, and those that you would assume would be more careful about it may overreact. So think about the fact that you have had a little time now to process it and think it through. So when they hear it, their initial response may be unexpected. Give them a little grace. Let them realize that they're going to have a little bit of time to sort it all through, and they may come back with a different reaction. The other thing I would recommend is, just in the same way with the prodigal son, he said, Father, I have sinned against you, and I've sinned against heaven. That if she can start with that coming forward as a place of showing how she is repentant and how she's humbled by this and what she plans to do, how she's going to go forward or whatever, will give people a sense of where she's coming from. There are people, obviously, that we know that they wouldn't even care if they had sinned before marriage, if they were pregnant. It was like, well, you just have to accept me because this is the way things are done today. But if she shows that humbled repentant side, people are much more likely then to come alongside and be supportive for her.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, too, you know, just recognizing, and what she has to realize is that God does have her story and he knows what's going to happen with this.
That's
and
good.
I think in terms of the job situation, you know, it is possible that it will cost her job, you know, if they are a nonprofit and not, you know, I mean, their decision, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But many, you know, like you said, it could be a situation where because she is repentant, you know, it's a growing opportunity, it's whatever. But to realize that, you know, she needs to be careful about guarding against bitterness or how people may treat her in light
That's
of that,
right.
Because it is. I mean, it was obviously it's an altering decision in a number of different ways, and so definitely, you know, something to keep in prayer and to get a group of people around her to pray for her as well and support her.
That support is really important. I would also recommend that she go to a local pregnancy center, obviously a Christian one, because they have support groups. They have people there. They have women who have gone through this with dozens of other people that can offer their insights, their ideas. They have materials there, and that could be very useful. I don't want to forget the last part here about her child and what she mentioned. And what comes to my mind is Psalm 139, where God talks about how he knows us and he knows her child still being knitted together in the womb. And he knows everything about this. He knows the days of the life of that child, thoughts that she's thinking, words before she says them, actions before she takes them. And he loves her deeply and he loves this baby. And so she can be assured that she's got a Heavenly Father that's looking out for both of them.
Exactly. So, well, great, Joanne. Thank you so much for that encouragement and advice in the midst of that as well. Okay, everyone, that is it for this week's show. We do want to hear from you, so write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can address your question on a future show. And make sure you're keeping up with shows and commenting on our Facebook page and on the blog so that we know really what is resonating with you. And really, I think a lot of the power of the show is found in the community that it fosters and the different experiences that you all are able to share as a result of something that just prompts you through one of our topics. So make sure you're doing that as well. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.